Hey there, this is Talk Tech to Me. I'm Sue Spolin. Cloud computing is now a standard part of digital workflows. If you watch Netflix or visit LinkedIn, you're using Amazon's AWS. So it's quite likely a good choice for your business. Here's the thing. Cloud computing has hidden challenges. It really does take an expert to guide you through the cloud journey. That's why we've got Keith Gregory here. He's the AWS Technical Practice Lead at Chariot Solutions. He has a dozen years' experience working with AWS services. Coming up in this conversation, Keith reveals what he's learned to keep all those cloud functions running smoothly. Cloud computing is revolutionary, but it's not exactly user-friendly. There are a lot of AWS services to choose from, and you need to know which ones are right. Otherwise, you might rack up a major bill. Another thing you need to know is that cloud services are not set it and forget it. More on that coming up, but let's begin where Keith began when he first started using AWS.
When I first heard about AWS, I was putting together some demo applications, and this was back when the only services were EC2 and S3. EC2 is the Elastic Compute Cloud, and it was great. I could do a demo application, and I could deploy it onto an EC2 virtual machine, let it run in the cloud, do my demo, shut it down afterwards, all for a cost of about 10 cents. And I wouldn't have to carry a lot of things around on my personal workstation.
One of the things that I think about with AWS is that it's not particularly layperson friendly.
No. To use it effectively, you have to have a pretty good understanding of software deployments and networking, which is something that unfortunately a lot of application developers don't have. And you can go to Stack Overflow, for example, and on any given day, someone has misconfigured their networking, can no longer talk to their EC2 instance, and, well, what do I do? So yes, you do need, I think, some level of experience to be able to use it effectively.
So tell me, what is the business benefit of using AWS?
So that depends very much on the size of your company. A company like a startup, for example, they may only be able to exist because of AWS or similar services. That, sure, startups back in the 2000s would purchase a rack and a colocation facility, manage all of their hardware. I know, again, going back to Stack Overflow, a lot of the early Stack Overflow podcasts were talking about that whole process as a startup. And for startups where the startup founder has an idea and wants to bring that idea to reality, managing your own equipment is just a pain in the neck. So with AWS, you can bring up the equipment you need, scale it as your needs grow, and you're paying a monthly fee. And that may be more expensive than if you were to manage it yourself, but you have much more control. As a company grows bigger, really their needs change. Again, it's a situation of coming down to hardware and pre-buying. So I had an experience about 10 years ago with a mid-sized company that we were starting up a new joint venture with our European sister company. And at the very first kickoff meeting, where we don't even know exactly what we're building yet, our project manager says, okay, so what do we need for hardware on this? And that's the sort of thing that AWS lets you say, I don't know. We're going to implement this, then we're going to figure out our hardware needs. Also, for a lot of mid-size and larger companies, AWS provides, because it's a global cloud, it provides the ability to do things such as, let's say you're running in Europe for a European customer, and they might want to have their data stored in a European data center for whatever reason. AWS provides a whole range of European, Asian, and South American data centers, so you're not stuck with using a data center based in the United States. And that, again, data privacy issues, it also provides the ability to move your processing and your data closer to your actual clients, which can speed up their interaction with the data.
One of the things I think that AWS is excellent for is constant maintenance and upgrading of the hardware, which is, I think, which differentiates it from a company buying its own hardware, would you say?
Sure, but you have to be prepared to take advantage of that. As AWS has changed over the years, new hardware has come in, new ways of deploying your applications have come into existence. One company that I worked with, they were still stuck on the first generation of AWS hardware because of the way that they had deployed their system. And I don't want to get into the technical details, but it was about a 3-week project to make them able to upgrade. And then there's also the case where companies, you're running your hardware, you may not have a dedicated operations team, you may forget about it. I helped another company that had deployed their software 3 years ago, and the machines that it was running on had not been patched, had not been restarted in 3 years. And you don't know what security holes are opened up when you do that. So we went on a process, and again, this is deployment more than application development, but we went on a process to say, okay, let's get our deployments down. Let's be able to just start up a new set of machines with every deployment.
Wow, I actually think that that's something that a lot of business people might not even consider.
No, that's kind of the what you don't see just works, right? You're running in the cloud. You've got enough security in place. You probably aren't actually exposing security holes to the open world. So, for example, let's say you're running a web server that you haven't patched in 3 years, but you're running that behind Amazon's Elastic Load Balancer. Well, a lot of the traffic that might exploit bugs within the web server never gets to it. Some of it might, though, so you have to pay attention to your running applications.
So let's talk about high availability for a bit. Can you define that?
Sure. There are a couple of definitions, and I want to differentiate between high availability and disaster recovery. The basic idea of high availability is that your infrastructure never goes down. And if you have a failure, you'll seamlessly transition over to other hardware that will pick up. Or if you're doing a deployment, you can deploy into a new environment and switch over the traffic so that as far as your customers are concerned, you're always up. And that's high availability, and Amazon gives you a number of features to make that happen, which I'll talk about in a minute. The other side is disaster recovery, and a lot of people with dedicated hardware on premises think in terms of disaster recovery, that something happens to my primary data center, I need to be able to shift all load over to a secondary data center that's probably geographically isolated. Okay, and that's a completely different thought that is available with AWS. AWS has multiple data centers, multiple regions. Where AWS blurs things a little bit is in their world of high availability, you have multiple availability zones, which roughly correspond to data centers in a similar region. So the US East one is generally around Ashburn, Virginia. And you'll have different parts of that region where you have different data centers. And Amazon has high-speed links between them, so when they talk about high availability, they are actually capturing a lot of what traditional disaster recovery is. The idea that a street maintenance crew cuts through the main power cables into the data center. In a traditional world, that's a disaster recovery scenario. You learn that your website is down. You now have to go through a process of moving everything to your disaster recovery data center. With Amazon's availability zones, backhoe cuts through the power cables at one of their data centers. And because you've designed your architecture for a failover to support high availability, it's now taken up transparently by other data centers. I do want to stress, however, disaster recovery is still critically important with the Amazon world. You can be always up, or nine, I think three or four nines are very easily achievable. But there are cases where you have to be prepared to actually recover to somewhere else. Now, the simple case of all the all of the data centers in a region going down is not the thing you should worry about. That's a case where somebody has nuked Washington and taken out Ashburn, Virginia. What's more important, though, is when you depend on services, such as several years ago, S3 had an outage, and all of the services in that region depend on S3. So you need to be able to shift over and switch to a different region where you have basically a mirror and be prepared to recover to that. Now, that can be very expensive. In fact, one company that I worked with, when that S3 outage happened, it caught us all by surprise because S3 isn't supposed to ever go down. We looked at what it would take to fully replicate to a different region and came to the decision that it is a lot easier to have a very basic app server running somewhere outside of Amazon that just says the site is in maintenance mode. Because when S3 went down, it took down a significant part of the internet. Now, if you're Netflix scale, you can't even accept that. But for most companies, you have to make a cost-benefit analysis of true disaster recovery. And you also have to think about the fact that disaster recovery might be a case where you lose control of your AWS credentials.
What do you mean by losing control of your AWS credentials?
So when you access Amazon Web Services, you have users that are in Amazon passwords. You also have what's called root credentials. And if you're deploying on Amazon, the root credentials have complete control over the account and you should never, ever use them. The basic idea is that you sign up for your Amazon account, you make sure that you use an email address that goes to multiple people, you have a very complex password for your root credentials, and you use multi-factor authentication. And then you print all of that out and put it in your safe deposit box and create users. Because the problem is, if somebody ever gets access to those root credentials, they have complete control of your account, and there's really nothing you can do. They can switch the email address, they can do whatever damage they want, and Amazon doesn't actually know you. So Amazon can't say, oh yeah, this shouldn't have happened. So it is critically important to keep control of that, and critically important to be prepared if something happens. Even a set of developer credentials that might have too much power could be used to destroy all of your database systems and all of the backups. Okay, in a traditional data center, yeah, you have your operations team with that. The risk is still there. But in Amazon, it might be a little bit easier. So locking down your credentials and having fallback positions, I think, is at least as important in a cloud deployment, if not more so than traditional data center.
Do you need to have a certain risk profile in order to step into the cloud implementation?
Well, I was going to say you can't be risk averse. You can't be averse to trying new things is probably a better way of putting it. The cloud is new, and if you're making the move into the cloud, especially if you're doing it on your own, you're going to make some missteps along the way. So if you are completely comfortable with how you're currently deploying software and don't want to take the chances, you might not want to move to the cloud. On the other hand, you might discover that moving to the cloud solves a lot of problems. For example, you could say, yeah, I'm risk averse. I want to have my own data centers, deployments to my own data center. But, you know, I really can't justify having two complete deployment hardware, sets of deployment hardware running at the same time. So we're going to go and our deployment strategy is going to be at midnight, all of our developers come in, we shut down the old system, reinstall it, start up the new. And that process just has an insane level of risk. Because if you make a mistake, and I've been at companies that have that 2 a.m. oops, you really have no fallback position. Whereas in a cloud deployment, yeah, you're only paying for that hardware, that second set of hardware, for the few hours that you're doing the cutover. And then you can put the old one in mothballs, shut it down, and it stops being a charge.
Are there aspects of cloud deployment that people might be surprised to discover?
So sure. The first thing that people kind of get into trouble with cloud deployment is going to be security. Because security in the cloud is very different from security in a data center. In a data center, you have physical security of the machines so that you can't accidentally shut down a machine. You still could have a power failure and it goes down, but you're not going to have the mistake of some developer running the wrong script and shutting down the machines. Security in a data center is also really limited, quite frankly. So you have physical security, you have your passwords, but you don't have the kind of granular control over security that you might have in a cloud deployment. So taking a recent example of a well-known banking company that had a breach where they had their data storage exposed to the outside world. In a data center, yeah, if you have a machine, it has access to data storage in that data center. So you have like SAN, storage area network volumes that you mount on your instances. And you don't really think about that because there's really not that much you can do. If you take the same attitude with using, say, S3 buckets, now you might have a machine that's running your web server and has access to an S3 bucket that contains all your internal information that should never be exposed. So you have to really think about how you're going to lock down access to the various components of your cloud deployment.
So tell me, what are the challenges of moving to the cloud?
Okay, well, we hit security. Another big challenge, an unexpected challenge, is network latency. And if you're running on a local area network, you have response times single-digit milliseconds. If you're running, and this especially hits you if you're kind of doing a hybrid cloud approach where some of your applications live in your data center, some of them live on the cloud, you're actually looking at potentially tens of milliseconds for every interaction. So I recently worked with a company that they were doing a hybrid cloud strategy. Their application for every single user interaction made several dozen requests to their database. And when they first tried moving that database to the cloud, which is normally a good starting point, things that were taking 20 milliseconds to execute were suddenly taking close to a second, and the entire website slowed down to a crawl. So you have to think about that. You have to think about how your components in your architecture communicate with each other. And once you've moved everything to the cloud, you have fairly fast communications times. But then you also have to think about, are my web servers running close to my clients? So again, it takes a certain amount of time for electricity, for network packets to go across the United States. So if you're running in an East Coast data center, that slows down everything happening from the West Coast or from Europe or from Australia. So one of the benefits of the cloud for that, if you have a traditional data center, you're stuck with that. The benefits of the cloud is you can start moving your applications to be closer to your clients. And there are many different ways that you can do that. Now, kind of moving on from that, network latency is a problem. One of the things, especially with the Amazon cloud, that people get hit with is data transfer costs. And most people, when they're thinking of deploying to the cloud, are very worried about, these EC2 instances are going to cost me 10 cents an hour. That's $2.50 a day. That's $700 a year. I really have to be careful that I'm not running too many of those and focus entirely on right-sizing their EC2 deployments. Meanwhile, Amazon will charge you 9 cents per gigabyte for all data that comes out of those EC2 instances and goes to your actual clients. And that's actually the cheap end. That's on the U.S. data centers. I think Brazil, don't quote me on this, is up to about 25 cents per gigabyte moved across the network. Now, if your web app has a lot of large images or worse videos, that adds up really quickly. And even communications within the Amazon network, you're charged approximately to cross availability zones, 2 cents per gigabyte. So if you're making a lot of database calls, moving data back and forth very frequently, that's going to run up a bill. And again, a lot of companies, especially companies that think, oh, I'm just running on a local network, tend to do things very inefficiently. Again, another company I worked with a few years ago, they were communicating to a third-party data provider and essentially downloading a terabyte of data each day. That they didn't notice because data coming into the AWS cloud is free until we moved them into a more secure networking architecture. And now there was a device in the middle that was charging, I think, a penny or 4.5 cents per gigabyte. So now that terabyte a day added up really quickly. That's about $50 a day just for data movement.
I don't think that most people take all these pieces into account when they think cloud. They think, you know, oh, here's something that, you know, somebody else will maintain, that we've robust and that I don't have to worry about downtime. But now there are a lot of pieces of this that require expertise in understanding how to manipulate it, how to set it up and maintain it.
That's true. And there are a lot of companies that are out there that will help you to do that. And application developers generally don't have the knowledge to maintain their systems. They are used to writing Java code or Node.js or Python and deploying it, and it just runs. They don't have to think about that. With the cloud, you do have to think about that.
What questions should a business be asking a development company that's proposing to assist them in cloud deployment?
So this reflects kind of my personal bias, but I think a company, if you have a company coming in to help you with your cloud deployment, you should be asking that company, what are the alternatives? I sometimes refer to the paradox of choice when it comes to Amazon Web Services. So just for compute, basically deploying your application, you have EC2, ECS, EKS, Lambda, AWS Batch, as well as, Elastic Beanstalk, which kind of combines different components, and LightSail, which is designed for really an entry level. Each of those provides different trade-offs. And if a company comes in and says, yes, you should be deploying your entire web application on Lambda, you should say, why? And why wouldn't you deploy it on EC2, raw EC2 instance? Why wouldn't you deploy it on EKS? So I think that is the biggest thing when you're working with a company. Make sure that they actually know the various alternatives and can explain to you why the alternative they recommend is the best one for your business.
Are there customers who aren't ready to move to the cloud?
I think there are. And dividing the world into two parts, I think there are basically two types of organizations that probably either think they aren't ready or really aren't ready. And the first is the organization where, you know, you have the crusty old systems engineer who says, well, this is just someone else's computer. And that's true. And for that organization to move to the cloud would be fighting that systems engineer. And I think the only thing that really makes sense is when they have a crisis, then they'll be ready to move to the cloud. So that's kind of a group of companies that, you know, I hate to say it, but I might write off until they have a crisis. The other group is a company that has not got their processes. They may want to move to the cloud. They may see all of the good things of the cloud. They may understand the issues of going to the cloud, but they need to make their processes work. So, for example, PII, personally identifiable information, or medical records, you can't just drop that on any server. You can, and you can be sued. You need to really think about how you're going to manage that. You have to work through your processes. You have to make sure that your use of that data on the cloud lives up to what you have already contracted with your clients. A company I worked with recently, they had written into the contracts of their clients which data centers their data would live in. And they had to go back, they wanted to move to the cloud, they had to go back and talk to those clients and say, okay, we're making this move to the cloud. And that's a risky thing from a business. But yeah, they certainly weren't ready to move to the cloud when they first decided they wanted to. They had steps to take beforehand.
Any final thoughts about our conversation?
Sure, and that kind of follows on from the last point, is that moving to the cloud is a process. And it can be a very short process. For example, if you're a startup with a great idea and want to get your minimum viable product out as soon as possible, it can be a longer process if you're a medium-sized company that is looking to migrate your existing applications to the cloud. And it's a process that never ends. Once you're running in the cloud, there's always room for improvement. There's always, you may not have had the observability tools, monitoring tools with your local deployment. You may not have had even thought about them if you have a startup. But Amazon provides you enormous numbers of tools to make your cloud deployments work better. It's a process getting to the cloud, but it's also a process of once you're in the cloud, improving your cloud deployments and constantly thinking of what can we do better. And again, that for me is one of the great things about the cloud is you're not locked into a specific configuration. You can change, you can experiment. You can decide, hey, maybe we don't want to be running these MQ servers. Let's look at using Amazon's native queuing solution. And you can set some of your developers off to really truly understand that solution and how it would fit in and have a much better idea of how your application has to evolve to become not just cloud-enabled, but cloud-native.
I've been speaking with Keith Gregory. He's the AWS Technical Practice Lead at Chariot Solutions. If you're looking to create much greater efficiency in your business, consider the cloud. And there's no need to fly blind. With a great guide, you can learn the right questions to ask, whether you're at startup or enterprise level. Thanks for listening. This is Talk Tech to Me, and I'm Sue Spolin. Please take care of yourself and your people.